Welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Odyssey Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. That's Chris Biederman, who covers the 49ers, among other things, for a prominent newspaper in Northern California, in the capital city, some say. And we are going to talk about with training camp. Gosh, we're recording this July 16th. Rookies report in 2 days. And then a week after that, veterans report. And then the next day, we will get 49ers training camp practice. Cannot wait for that. And we are talking leap candidates today. Candidates, players who can take a leap in 2026. We'll dive into that. And of course, before we do that, a big shout out to our friends at Lamb Chops. SGLambChops.com is the website, the official clothing brand of this podcast. Promo code Candlestick20 when you check out to receive 20% off your order today. That is SGLambChops.com. Lamb Chops, join the herd. All right, not a hop, not a jump, leap candidates. Let's tap in. Here we go.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
All right, about that time. I feel good about being optimistic.
You're optimistic about being optimistic?
Yeah, I'm the Michael Jordan of being optimistic right now.
Okay. I feel like that's kind of unusual for you because isn't that like you're a glass half empty person, but maybe it speaks more to the 49ers that like at this point in the offseason, it's like, oh, what, Christian McCaffrey's got a contract thing, or Trent Williams has a contract thing, or somebody has a contract thing. And I think your optimism speaks to the fact that this might just be kind of a chill offseason for the Niners from like a drama perspective, save for the Brandon Ayuk stuff, which is probably more for us to talk about than it is for the Niners to talk about at the moment.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those weird seasons where there's expectation. I'm expecting the 49ers to be pretty good, but I'm also, I think from a roster standpoint, they're in a like do or die Super Bowl situation, like Super Bowl or bust, if you will. But I also think in reality, like they're not quite there, and they might get there by December. Like I'm fully open to the fact or the idea that by December, they're just one of the two best teams in the NFC or one of the best teams in the league. And they're a Super Bowl favorite. But I think going into the year, they are good enough to get there, but they don't necessarily have the expectation to get there. And that makes it a little more fun. It makes the ride a little bit more enjoyable when it's not like the world is ending after every loss or, you know, kind of where we got in the end of the Jimmy Garoppolo era.
They're kind of in a similar spot, I think, they were going into last year, with the exception of, like, you feel pretty good about, I think, the last two draft classes just overall. I don't know if there's necessarily star power in either of these last two draft classes, but there are like what seem to be reasonably good players to potentially good starters in the class who might stick around. But ultimately, I think that's sort of the most important thing for the 49ers. And like, aside from health, like the obvious caveat to every single 49ers conversation is health and everything. You talk to smart, like Steve Young was saying it in Tahoe last week, like, well, if the Niners are healthy, then they're going to be as good as anybody and going to be really tough out in the playoffs. Like, we know all of these things, right? Like that is the most basic level of analysis when it comes to this team. And it's our job to come up with more than that. I think the next layer of 49ers analysis is, yes, they have this star power at the top end of the roster. Do they have anybody developing underneath them that can develop into stars? And I think what we're going to talk about today is we listed out 8 guys that could potentially make that leap. And if they do make that leap, that could ultimately define how far the 49ers go, because we know that, you know, the George Kittles, Fred Warners, Nick Bosa's, Brock Purdy's, Christian McCaffrey's, Trent Williams, et cetera's, they can get you pretty far in the playoffs, but ultimately, it's like Spencer Burford missing a blocking assignment that costs you a championship, right? So it's like, can the rest of the roster elevate itself to supplement the star guys in a way that they need to really contend? And I think we're going to identify some candidates at that today.
Yeah, so let's start our first two, these are in no particular order. We tried to order them to make the conversation flow, just to peel back the curtain all the way. And we're starting with a couple of 2024 draft picks. A couple of 2024 draft picks in the secondary. Who is your first player, your first leap candidate?
Yeah, it's Renardo Green. And he's, I think, you know, you look at these superlative conversations that we can have, like, you know, who has the most pressure on him or who's a leap candidate. I think Renardo Green falls into a few of these buckets. Like, I think you could say he has a ton of pressure on him this training camp, in addition to saying he could be a leap candidate. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, he was benched for a moment in the divisional round loss to the Seahawks, and he was seen yelling at the coaching staff and Kyle Shanahan. And that might not portend to great things going into this season, but he also is super talented and has played pretty well in spurts. And to me seems like a candidate to sign a new contract and be around for a few more years. And what's interesting for him is he's a holdover from previous regimes where we don't know how Raheem Morris feels about Renardo Green. We don't know if he's going into this season saying, hey, Renardo Green is somebody that I view as replaceable, evident by, you know, potentially the signing of Jack Jones and the other additions that they made to the secondary, right? Like, the Niners brought in guys with real experience in the secondary to potentially push some of the guys that are already there, and one of those guys squarely being Renardo Green. I'm really optimistic about what Renardo Green can be as a talent, but he's in a really interesting spot because, again, it might be that Raheem Morris sees something that he doesn't love in relation to his defense, evident by getting Jack Jones and the other guys that the 49ers got in the offseason. So I'm really interested to see Renardo Green. I'm overall optimistic, but I could also see a scenario where it's like Renardo Green is, you know, their third or fourth corner now, because Raheem Morris is going another direction.
Right. I feel that way. I'm gonna introduce my player now because I feel the same way about him, although the context is a little bit different. My first choice is Malik Mustafa. And a little bit different career arc than Renardo Green. But the way I feel about Malik Mustafa, and the reason I think that we could see him take a leap, and I'll get into some numbers here in a second, but I feel the same way about him that I do about Green, or most, I feel about the same way about Mustafa as I do about Green, because it's tough to judge the 49ers secondary last year because their pass rush was that bad. Their pass rush was detrimental to their secondary. And so if you have a player like Renardo Green, who's ready to take that leap in year two, but then all of a sudden has to start covering every receiver for 9 seconds, like that's impossible, right? It's why the 49ers build their defense front to back. You get after the quarterback, you make the quarterback get rid of the ball sooner than he wants or get off of his spot, and now he's scrambling. It makes life easier on your secondary, right? And they didn't have that last year. So I'm in on Renardo Green's talent. I've been in on Renardo Green's talent. And if you just told me that he had a huge year in part because they were finally able to marry his talent to a high quality pass rush, it wouldn't shock me at all. So I'm in on that idea. And then Mustafa is a little bit the same thing, although not necessarily in coverage. I don't think we're ever going to see him be a great coverage player, but you even look at some of the other stats. Like last year, the 49ers defense was really bad in 2024. And it was better through parts of last year, and obviously the injuries caught up with him towards the end. But even with a slightly better unit around him, you saw Malik Mustafa have, you know, from an advanced stats perspective, a very similar year. But then you see in he produces a little bit as a pass rusher, had three pressures in 10 pass rushes. But the thing that really jumps out is his run stops. According to Pro Football Focus, he played 7 fewer snaps of run defense last year than he did as a rookie, but had 12 more run stops. And I think that speaks to A, his growth as a player, but B, getting to play next to and behind just a better defense and in a better defensive scheme. So I'm expecting him to be even better in year 3 because I'm expecting the 49ers defense as a whole to be better. And with that, I think we'll really see whatever talent there is there with Malik Mustafa, I think, really come to the fore.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think he was hurt pretty significantly last offseason because he was recovering from the knee injury.
Yeah,
you know, between year one and year two, to spend it recovering from an injury and not really developing, I think that can be pretty detrimental. So if he's healthy this offseason and getting a full offseason to develop instead of just try to recover, I think that could be super beneficial for him. So yeah, I don't disagree with anything about Mustafa. My next guy, kind of parlaying that into the same position.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm in on Marquis Siegel, and
same.
I don't know. I still don't know. I'd love to give Robert Saleh some truth serum and have him explain exactly what happened with Marquis Siegel last year. The PFF numbers from a coverage perspective aren't good, but it never really felt like watching the games that he was really out of position. It was
yes.
him getting beat in tight coverage a lot.
Yep.
And it was just like, sometimes you just don't win 50-50 balls, and maybe he could be better at that, sure. But he didn't feel like he was out of place, and it felt nope. like he was a really physical tackler. He missed way fewer tackles on a per-play basis than Jair Brown and Malik Mustafa, just a much better tackler. And we saw flashes, like sometimes he made some really good tackles in the open field when he was in there, and the fact that the 49ers didn't make a significant investment in safety aside from Ashton Davis this offseason makes me think that they feel pretty good about what Marquis Siegel could be, and his yep. versatility and his play speed and his cover skills. Like I think he got, I don't want to say got unlucky because that sounds like a cop out, but it just felt like to me, it was like, man, like he was in really good position. He just got beat to the ball. In so many different plays last year. And I feel like if he can build on just that positioning and improve his ball skills a little bit more, just given his versatility, like I think he could be a potential starter for the next 2-3 years for the Niners, given his skill set. And I'm all the way in. And I think at minimum, he should be a really good special teams player.
Yep.
Like given his speed and his range, like so I'm in on Marquis Siegel as a leap candidate, because frankly, like I just don't know what there is from Jair Brown that you're super excited about if you're Raheem Morris going into this situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is going to be opportunity for Marquis Siegel to win a starting job.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I was really surprised that they didn't give him more leash last year.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit my concern about this year's draft class, where they feel like they are competing for a Super Bowl enough that you can't let those young players grow and play through their mistakes. But I think if it was up to us, are we renaming Jimmy Ward Island Marquis Siegel Island?
I'm not there yet.
Okay.
We're not there. I thought so highly of Jimmy Ward as like, sure. This dude is like one of the best safeties in the league, right, and people right. are still holding on to the fact that he gave up a ton of touchdowns as a slot corner his rookie year,
right,
like playing
right.
out of position. Right. Yeah. Like I think that like Brandon Marshall game, I think just haunted Jimmy yes. Ward's like entire first like three seasons to the point where
he was hurt.
He needed to be like years and years removed from that game before people realize how good of a player he was. I'm in on Siegel as like, this guy could potentially start, but I'm where I was at on Jimmy Ward when we created Jimmy Ward Island. I was like, no, this is one of the better safeties yeah. in the league.
And well, I think remember,
people are missing that.
That was one of our first podcasts back in like 2018, because he was going to be a free agent.
Yeah.
And it was like, they should re-sign Jimmy Ward because Jimmy Ward is good at football. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
It took Jimmy Ward going to the Texans and then the 49ers being ass at safety for the next 4 years for everybody to go, oh, Jimmy Ward, pretty good.
Hasn't really been great for Jimmy since.
That's fine.
Don't want to speak on too much of that. You can Google it if sure. you're interested in seeing what's happened with him. But sure. hope he's doing okay. But yeah, the Jimmy Ward Island thing was, he was a much better player than Marquis Siegel is at this point. But Siegel,
currently Siegel an unnamed island.
Yes. Unnamed island.
Yeah, man, I'm all in on Marquis Siegel, and I think the 49ers should be giving him. I'm sorry, I just like Jair Brown's not it, and he's going into year four. I don't think he's going to get a contract extension. I would rather see what I have with Marquis Siegel, because I don't think the difference between the 49ers winning and losing a Super Bowl is going to be Marquis Siegel or Jair Brown. Sure. I would way rather say, Marquis, you're the starter. Go play 17 games and let's see how it goes.
I feel like Siegel plays so much faster, has so much more range, and is a better tackler.
Yep. Yeah. I think he's just overall going to be a better player here in year two. And if he's the player out of everybody on this list that we've talked about and will talk about, he's the player that if you told me one of them was going to become an all pro, I think he's the guy I'd pick.
Interesting.
Where Niners pass rush is good. He has five or six interceptions and is Talano Hufanga-esque in that all pro season he had, where he's just kind of wreaking havoc all the time. That wouldn't shock me at all.
Do you think we need a number?
Let me take that back. It would surprise me a little bit.
I would be surprised if he was an all pro, but
if you told me one of them was an all pro and he was the one, that wouldn't shock me.
Sure. Do we need a number change?
Oh, interesting.
36. Can you still be a great safety wearing number 36?
Yeah.
No disrespect to Merton Hanks whatsoever.
That was direct respect at Merton Hanks. You took aim and fired.
This is more of a conversation about eras, because you see like the elite safeties wearing the single digits now. Does he need to get into that realm before people really take him seriously? Because off the top of my head, I can't name you any all pros wearing 36 at safety.
Yeah, man. I'm going through the Niners listed numbers right now. You got Jair Brown has 27. Darrell Luter has 28. Darrell Luter's probably not going to make the team. Is Marquis Siegel a better player if he has 28?
No, I'm talking, I think you gotta elevate beyond that. Like, can you get a single digit? Or like 25 or below. Like, I feel like there are tiers of numbers in the 20s, and there's a drop off after 25.
25 presently available according to the 49ers roster.
Okay.
But that's it. 24 taken by Jack Jones, although not a slam dunk to make the roster. Christian McCaffrey 23, Nate Hobbs 22, again not a slam dunk to make the roster. Although I like Nate Hobbs. I think Nate Hobbs can play. 21, obviously off limits. And then Upton Stout has 20.
24 is a good number. The Niners have had a lot of like mediocre players wearing 24. That's like a very, very good football number.
I agree. We got to change that. I either need Jack Jones to be awesome or for him to give the number to Marquis Siegel, and Marquis Siegel will be awesome. But yeah, no, I think 36 on a good safety has big like training camp energy,
right? That's like, okay,
it's like a point, running back wearing like 47,
right? No, that's like what happens with the night, like they always have their undrafted rookies wearing 49 at running back. Like, that's kind of right. What 36 feels like. And again, I had a Merton Hanks jersey as a child.
Yeah,
it is not a disrespect thing to Merton Hanks, it's just about eras,
right?
So anyway, before we move on, let's tell our friends about Lamb Chops. SGLambChops.com is the website. I am wearing, Kyle, you remember the seashell and starfish and like ocean themed mesh shorts?
Of course, dude.
I'm wearing them right now. The mesh shorts have basically been in steady rotation. I have like 10 pairs of them. Basically been in steady rotation for the last like 4 months. Like, if you see me in person, there's a 99% chance I'm wearing a pair of Lamb Chops mesh shorts. They have a brand new pair, which I need to get. Craig and Jordan, this is a message to you guys. I need these Dia de los Muertos mesh shorts. They look great.
Yeah. Craig, what are you even doing right now?
Craig is...
What are you, busy?
Craig's in the thick of a new life in his house. And that's very relatable.
It's a baby. It sleeps a lot. While it's sleeping, get us some shorts.
Yeah, but we also have Candlestick Chronicles merchandise. SGLambChops.com. Throw Candlestick in the search bar, and you'll find the hoodies and the shirts. Not wearing them right now because I wore it previously when we recorded earlier this week, and it's too hot for the hoodie, but the hoodie will be, again, in regular rotation in the fall at Levi's Stadium, and yeah, order yours today, SGLambChops.com. Use promo code Candlestick20 to save 20% off your order. Lamb Chops, join the herd.
I almost fell over. I thought they made a Candlestick Chronicles passport holder. Oh my God.
It showed up in the, I mean,
I would be obnoxious if I had a Candlestick Chronicles passport holder. Like, cause right now I'm just guy who puts my head down at the border, wherever, you know, at whatever country. Taking the passport out, I hand it to them. I stand there. I, you know, take my hat and glasses off so I can see that I'm just some bald asshole. And then they give me my passport back, and then I walk through, and it's just all day. If I had a Candlestick Chronicles, if I had a Candy Cron passport holder, oh, I have the Lamb Chops one already. Don't even the Lamb Chops passport holder is fire. But if it had a Candle Cron logo on it, I would be up there. I'd be like, yeah, so this is my passport, but you notice my passport holder. It's the podcast. I don't know if you guys listen to podcasts out here in Belgium, but you guys are big Niner fans out here.
Belgium. Anyways. Interesting.
That's where I want to go next. I want to do like Amsterdam down to Brussels.
Okay. Can I have that conversation?
Hit the Netherlands and then hit the... Good producing. All right, moving on. Players. Players. No, we can talk about this offline for sure.
Okay.
Moving on, my next leap candidate, staying on the defensive side.
Yes.
I think it's Alfred Collins.
Sure.
And I'm of the mind that we're going to find out everything we need to know about Alfred Collins as a player this year. He's in year two. He's going to have all the opportunity in the world to be a difference maker on the defensive line for the 49ers. We saw flashes last year. And we saw more flashes towards the end of the year than we did at the beginning of the year. Like, that's a positive. But if he can't parlay that into being a really, really excellent player in year two, I worry that we may never get there. But because of that, and because of some of the flashes we did see, and just some of the ways he can move at his size, the door is open for him to be a really, really dominant player. Maybe never as a pass rusher. Maybe never a guy who's going to be on the field when... on third and seven, but he could be a really, really dominant difference-making run stopper in the middle of the defensive line. And if he takes that leap this year, I don't know that there's a player on the list who would have a bigger impact making a leap than Alfred Collins.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. When you look at the potential to like really change the face of the defense, say Alfred Collins does develop into a Pro Bowl type guy, then that elevates the defensive line in particular in a pretty substantial way. Particularly, you know, you're looking at Osa Digizua playing next to him and Nick Bosa coming back from the injury. One thing I'd also say about Alfred Collins is I think the 49ers have a lot of belief in what he can become.
Yeah.
And that's not true with all of their young players all the time, right? Like, it's pretty clear. The Niners kind of have a habit of throwing away sort of like the draft status of young guys, right? Like, they don't typically give the same leash to early round draft picks. Like, if a guy comes in and is like bad his first 2 years, they will cut him, you know, like before his second season, if he has a bad second training camp. Like, they don't have any problem doing that. I say that to say that there's a lot of belief in Alfred Collins because of what he did last year, but also because he's a second round pick. Like, it's they think very highly of him and they're counting on him to be a significant contributor going forward. And so I think that's notable because, you know, there are guys who would have similar rookie seasons from a production standpoint, but you wouldn't go into year two being like, yeah, the Niners don't always have a ton of belief in these guys if they didn't see enough as a rookie. And I think they saw enough from him as a rookie to feel good about him going into year two.
Yep, absolutely. Who's next on your list?
I'm going to the offensive side. Been a lot of defensive discussion.
Great.
I'm going with Jordan James, second year running back. And this could completely bite me in the ass if Kalen Black ends up being the guy backing up Christian McCaffrey.
But these are just candidates. These are candidates, not predictions.
These are candidates. These are not slam dunk guarantee break leap leap guys.
Yeah.
But no, like, I just, going back to the way the 49ers feel about their young players, the fact that Jordan James earned enough equity from the coaching staff and Kyle Shanahan in particular to like be up and be active in the division round playoff game against the Seahawks, despite like doing nothing during the regular season, indicates to me that behind the scenes, Kyle Shanahan was impressed. And given how difficult it is to impress Kyle Shanahan if you're a young player, particularly at a skill position, that to me spoke loudly about where Jordan James potentially could be. The flip side of that coin is that, well, how great can the 49ers feel about Jordan James if they go use a third round pick on Kalen Black?
Right. Very strange.
And maybe that's the issue, or maybe they really like Jordan James, but they're also like, well, there's a real chance that Christian McCaffrey's hurt for a long time, and then Jordan James is a running back, and we still need another guy, and that's why we got Kalen Black. Sure. Like, that could be a way that they're looking at it.
Tougher scene for Isaac Arendo.
Isaac Arendo not making the leap candidates list, although he might be on somebody else's. I think James...
You mean like on some other teams?
Maybe. Going back to what James did at Oregon, I thought just like really steady, not like super duper explosive, but somebody who's going to get you the yardage that, like, a big thing with Kyle Shanahan is like, is he getting the yards that are there for him to get given how good the blocking is on any given play?
Yes.
That's how Shanahan is like, all right, if the play is blocked for 4 yards and you're getting those 4 yards consistently, and maybe even there are times where you're getting 6 yards when it's only blocked for 4. Like, that is how Kyle Shanahan sort of evaluates his running backs. And when there are guys who, you know, it's blocked for 5, but they're consistently getting 3 because they're not hitting the hole quickly enough or recognizing things quickly enough, then that's where, you know, those players get demerits or whatnot. Mm-hmm. For me, I think Jordan James can be what Kyle Shanahan is looking for in terms of like a steady, reliable running back. And if Christian McCaffrey has to miss any time, there's potential there for Jordan James to step in. And obviously it's not going to be Christian McCaffrey, a Hall of Fame type player, but like somebody who you could play and the offense doesn't take a substantial step back.
Yeah, man. And one of the biggest reasons I think we could see Jordan James specifically take a leap this year is A, I think the 49ers desperately want a player who can take some of the workload from Christian McCaffrey, who they feel good about putting on the field and not bogging down their offense. I think they really want to find that. Two, you mentioned Christian McCaffrey, and I say this stat a lot. In the previous 2 years that he has led the league in touches, the year after he's played a combined 8 games, played 3 1 year and 5 the other year, and he led the league in touches last year. So banking on 17 is really tough. And the reason I think Jordan James could be in line to make a leap is not just because of the role, but remember, he missed like almost all of training camp. He broke his hand again in joint practice against the Broncos, or broke a finger or something with his hand. And then just didn't get a preseason. And so this year, assuming he stays healthy, he's going to get a real opportunity to finally get like an NFL training camp in and get more comfortable in the offense and get more opportunities to show Kyle Shanahan and the offensive coaching staff what he's capable of. And I think that could be a really big deal coming off of, you mentioned that divisional game or the divisional playoff game against Seattle, where, yeah, it looked like he had some juice. But kind of interesting. And again, not that it was garbage time and all the backups were in, but it was interesting enough that Kyle Shanahan talked about him in owners meetings, and I think he's going to get a ton of opportunities here to cement himself as the RB2.
Yeah, and I just want to say, just because I called Jordan James a leap candidate. I'm still way more optimistic than most on Black.
Kalen Black.
And just
like rookies just aren't leap candidates.
Kalen, yeah, I'm in on Kalen Black, and like I understand a third round pick is probably too early to take him. Independent of where they took him, I am very optimistic on what Kalen Black can be based on what he did at Indiana. I know he's like 29 years old at this point, but still, like, I think just because I think Jordan James is a leap candidate doesn't mean I'm down on Kalen Black. I think Kalen Black could potentially be good.
Yeah.
Not saying I agree with taking him in the third round, but
sure.
Still might be a player.
And he's probably going to get, again, like we talked about, he's probably also going to get a lot of opportunities. But yeah, rookies can't be. Rookies just can't be a leap candidate. So that's how we do this. I'm going to stay on the offensive side of the football as well. I'm marking Ricky Pearsall down as a leap candidate. I'm marking Ricky Pearsall down as a player who can put it together. If he's healthy, I think we talked about this on the last podcast. But when he's been healthy, he's been really productive. Is in the field that Brock Purdy likes to throw it. And so if he's winning in those areas, and Brock Purdy's the quarterback, and defenses have to worry about George Kittle, and they're still worrying about Christian McCaffrey, oh, and there's Mike Evans, I think Ricky Pearsall is going to get a ton of looks where he's one-on-one, creating separation in the middle of the field, and getting himself open in spots where Brock Purdy is very good at delivering the ball. And if he does that, and if he's healthy for 17 games, then I think we're looking at a season where Pearsall could have 1,200 yards and 6 or 7 touchdowns.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's funny with Pearsall is like he's a leap candidate for the second year in a row. And, you know, last year we sort of. Wait, this is his third season, right? Yeah, this is his second season.
Yes. Yeah, year three.
Okay. So, yeah, he was a leap candidate last year. And he showed signs of taking that leap early on in the season. And then he gets hurt. And so that's sort of like, that's, I think, kind of the Ricky Pearsall experience that we're going to go into this year with potentially really high expectations of what this guy could be. And it's like, all right, he reaches those because he's really talented and is putting up a bunch of numbers, like you said. Mm-hmm. Or man, this guy's, it's so disappointing because he really could be a 1400 yard guy, but he's just has such a hard time staying healthy.
Yeah.
That I think that's just kind of what the Ricky Pearsall experience is right now. And I think that's the reason why the 49ers continue to make investments at the position. Mm-hmm. With Mike Evans and DeJon Stribling is like, they like what Ricky Pearsall could be, but they can't rely on him to be that guy just yet. So that's kind of why this is such a roller coaster, but I'm with you. Like, he definitely could be a guy who takes a substantial leap this year.
Well, it's just, we've seen the talent. We know the talent's there. And I think he's going to be put in a position to maximize that talent. Yeah. And I'm not talking, oh, Ricky Pearsall took a leap and had 800 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns. Like, no, I think he could be lead the team in receiving and be a real problem type of leap. Yeah,
totally.
Who's next?
My last guy, polarizing figure, I think, among the fan base. Nick Martin, the linebacker, the run and hit linebacker.
Is he a polarizing figure?
Kind of. I think some people like Nick Martin, and I think some people hate Nick Martin.
I'm putting a poll on Twitter.
Okay. Nick Martin, is he polarizing?
Do you love Nick Martin?
Yes, no, not sure.
Yes, no, not sure. Yeah. I think more people are probably not sure on Nick Martin than love or hate him. But anyways, continue. It's besides the point. Semantics.
I think he could be a leap candidate because I think there's a chance that he plays a lot because Dre Greenlaw might get hurt.
Sure.
And I also think that he was behind D Winners last year. and he was probably a little bit raw, and it was probably an overdraft, and drafting him in the third round led to these expectations that, like, oh, that's the same round you drafted Fred Warner. Like, this guy might be, you know, really, really good. And it's like, well, we got to pump the brakes a little bit on those types of expectations. But mm-hmm. I think having a second season, I think the 49ers are really good at developing linebackers. I think he from a skill set standpoint, is what you want from a quote-unquote run-and-hit linebacker that Kyle Shanahan seems to value so much. And I think if D Winters does the D, or if Dre Greenlaw does the Dre Greenlaw thing and is hurt at whatever point, I think Nick Martin should be the first guy to replace him, because he is that run and hit weak side linebacker, maybe more so than somebody like Tatum Bethune, who's more of a traditional Mike. I think you could see Nick Martin pop a little bit, and I'm still optimistic about what he could be. And again, maybe I'm wrong because he's not a Raheem Morris guy, and maybe Raheem Morris just is doesn't feel like he's a fit for the defense that he wants to run. But I think Nick Martin, if given the opportunity and continues to develop, I'm optimistic about what he could be as a potential starter long term after Dre Greenlaw is no longer the starter.
I'm not letting it slide that you said Dre Greenlaw does the Dre Greenlaw thing and gets hurt. That's insane. That's a wild thing to say.
Apologies.
That's not going unnoticed.
You can ask Broncos country if that's an accurate
Dre Greenlaw was banged up last year, and it's hard to bank on 17 games from him.
Yes.
We in agreement?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why I said it.
Yeah, man. I think Nick Martin was on the cusp of maybe not breaking out last year, but establishing himself as a regular part of the 49ers defense. And then he got concussed and never got back on the field, which is kind of nuts. Yeah. So I'm the thing I'm interested to see, do you know what I'm fascinated by? Is whether they give him a crack at Sam linebacker again, or if he's just strictly a weak side linebacker and that's where he's going to play. And if Dre Greenlaw plays 17 games and Nick Martin's a special teams guy, or do they try and make him a Sam? I know he's not the prototypical build there, but if teams are going to run a bunch of three tight end personnel groups, or multiple tight end personnel groups where they're going to try and throw out of those formations, like, hey, maybe having a fast athletic linebacker on the field is better than not. And if he's a run and hit linebacker who you think he can defend a run anyway, then throw him at Sam and see how it goes. I'm interested to see if they do that, or if they're going to stick with Luke Gifford, or if they try Jaden Duggar, the rookie there, who's more kind of the bigger linebacker than Nick Martin.
I'm curious about that too. My initial thought would be probably not, just because it sounds like the Sam linebacker is going to be kind of like an edge setter in like a five down front, more so than like just your traditional off ball guy. Right. He's going to be more of like what you used to consider a 3-4 linebacker to be, an outside guy who is,
sure,
you know what I mean? I wonder if that's what that position is going to look like, which Nick Martin is certainly not that type of athlete, or that type have that type of skill set. Also, just one more question I want to ask about Nick Martin, going back to an earlier discussion. Maybe the biggest number change candidate on either of our lists. 45 is just 45. Not getting it done. It's not getting it done.
It's really not.
So our guy needs something in the 50s, or again, maybe something in the single digit range to solidify himself as a leap candidate.
It is kind of interesting that he's wearing 45, though, because if he can't figure out a way to get on the field this year, he might just be Demetrius Flanagan-Fells.
Wow.
Which isn't bad. Like, that's a good living. Like, he's fine. You're just going to play a lot of special teams, pal.
That would be tough for a third round pick. Because Flan was an undrafted rookie, or an undrafted free agent, I should say.
He might do the Demetrius Flanagan-Fells thing and just not play.
Maybe.
No, I'm with you. I think Nick Martin is really talented.
Yeah.
And if you told me that you're getting six games out of Dre Greenlaw, sure. And Nick Martin plays a ton and is D Winters 2.0. See, I think the Niners are very high on Nick Martin still. Because I think if they weren't, I don't think they would have traded D Winters.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
So, anyways.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
My next one. Is this my last one? My last one. I'm going with Dominic Pooney. I'm going to the offensive line because I'm a football guy, all right? And we're not getting through a discussion about leap candidates without talking about the big uglies. So, Dominic Pooney, really good in year one. Looked like the 49ers might have just drafted a perennial all-pro type of offensive lineman. And then he struggled in year two. And he dealt with a knee injury that he played through for most of the year. And if you go look at, if you're into Pro Football Focus grades, from week 3 to week 11, I'm going to give you his Pro Football Focus colors here. Dark red.
Yikes.
Gold.
Red's bad.
Gold, also not good. Gold is about average. Orange below
gold
average.
Is like,
red.
It looks gold, but it's really like between like red and yellow. It's or like it's in that range of the color palette. It's not like gold star.
Right.
It's like
right.
Not
correct.
What you want. Yeah.
Right. More gold, more like maize, right? And not maize because he cheated. Maize because that's just where the color fell on the color palette. Anyways, orange, gold, orange, Kelly green, orange. Kind of puke green. That is to say he wasn't very good through the middle portion of the season. But then you go from week 12 on, it's like a deep green, almost like a seafoam green. Then
green's
like puke green, then gold, but then green, dark blue, green, and then orange in the season finale.
Blue is the best color you can have in PFF grades.
Right. So sorry if that's confusing for people, inside jokes. Hopefully you're a part of one someday, but yeah, no, the point I'm getting around to is in the second half of the season, he was way better than he was in the first half of the season through the first portion of the season, which I think stems from his knee issue becoming less of a problem. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if we see Dominic Pooney healthy in year three, third season in the league, have a bounce back year where he really breaks out and becomes the offensive lineman in year three that we all thought he was going to be in year two.
I have a big picture question, and maybe this is a topic for a separate podcast, but just roll with me on this.
Okay.
Is there too much made of the 49ers, quote unquote, issues along the offensive line just because Aaron Donald blew him up in the NFC Championship game in 2022 and Chris Jones blew him up in two Super Bowls and the Seahawks did what they did last year? Like, is the 49ers offensive line better than it's discussed just because it gets beaten in the most high profile spots? Like, do we think I feel like we talk about the offensive line like it's one of the worst in the league, but it's like, no, it's pretty good. It's just gotten exposed in like really high pressure key moments.
It's aggressively average. And I think getting exposed in the high pressure key moments is where the frustration comes from. Sure. It's not necessarily the frustration, I think, with the players specifically. It's that the 49ers won't do the thing to combat the thing that has led to their demise three times under Kyle Shanahan. And the fact that I think the frustration is more with Kyle Shanahan's stubbornness and his adherence to his way of doing things more than it is a frustration with any individual player. Right. But at the same time, they seem to believe that Jake Brendel is God's gift to playing center. And Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are like, no, he's one of the best centers in the league. Okay. I guess. And then the fact that there's just a rotating cast of guys at left guard, none of whom are great. And instead of saying, hey, we're going to go fix this, they just got more guys to be part of a rotating cast. And it's their team building philosophy. And I'm with you. I don't think it's the worst unit in the league. But on the other hand, if you told me they met Seattle in the NFC title game and had a drive to win it at the end, get blown up, and they were in third and 18 because Brock Purdy got sacked twice because Jake Brendel and whoever was starting at left guard just couldn't deal with what are their names? Is it Byron Young? No, Byron Murphy. Yeah, Byron Young's on the Rams. But like Byron Murphy and whoever else, like, yeah, I could see it.
Yeah. I just think it's like, so I don't disagree with you necessarily. I thought it was interesting. Didn't PFF rank the Niners' offensive line as like seventh in the league?
Going maybe
into the season. I think they just released their rankings recently. I just think it's funny because like, you invest a second round pick in Aaron Banks, who gets a massive second contract with the Packers. Mm-hmm. And like, there's consternation about the Aaron Banks pick, but it ultimately, I think in the aggregate, you would say it worked out. Like, it was like a relatively good pick. He wasn't like an all pro who's like going to stick around for 10 years, but like,
right.
Dominic Pooney, I think after his rookie season, you would say that's an awesome draft pick.
Yep.
Colton McKivitz, people might not love Colton McKivitz, but to get your starting long-term right tackle who still plays at like a very affordable salary cap number in the fifth round, whenever they drafted him, like, I think mm-hmm. that would be a win. I think you'd probably look at Jalen Moore as a win given the amount of money Kansas City paid him. Although maybe that isn't aging super well because he didn't hold on to the starting job there last year. I think my overall point is I kind of think we think too little. And Mike McGlinchey, obviously, like, good player, got a big contract with Denver, still a good player, right tackle and arguably the best offensive line in the league. My point is I think because the 49ers offensive line has been highlighted in such important moments, I think we think it's worse than it is.
Okay.
In general.
Probably.
Because like the sack numbers relative to the rest of the league are fine. They obviously are a good running team, although I guess last year was not great. From a yards per carry perspective, I think part of that can be traced to George Kittle being out and all the receivers and everything like that. So
Christian McCaffrey being a step slow.
Yikes!
He was. Go watch the touchdown.
Oh, I know.
In the Super Bowl against the Chiefs with the Juwan Jennings pass. Watch Christian McCaffrey run on that play, and then watch him run on any play last year, and tell me it's the same player.
No, I did the same thing last year. Like, I talked about it on the podcast. Like, go back and watch like a Christian McCaffrey like highlight reel from his first couple years with the Panthers. He was like a physical marvel.
Yeah.
And like he's just not nearly as explosive. He feels like he's 80% as explosive as he was early on. He's still a damn good player, obviously. Yeah,
he's awesome. He's awesome. But
just the pure explosiveness is just at a completely different level. So yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, a run that used to go for 30 yards is now going for 3 because a guy he used to run past is now tackling him. And
ergo, the offensive line isn't as much of the issue as maybe the numbers would indicate.
Right. I have one last thing on breakout players, or I'm sorry, players to take a leap. I don't think this guy's going to take a... I don't think this... Leap candidates. I don't think this guy's going to take a leap because a leap to me is... Like a noticeable, like, oh my God, that guy might get a contract. Like, that's wow. What a and player way exceeded expectations. I just want to circle Keon White here, though, because I think Keon White is going to be a really effective player for the Niners this year. I don't think he's going to have 12 sacks. I don't think he's going to be anything crazy like that. I don't think he's going to be a Pro Bowler. I just think he's going to be a like a Charles Omenihu level impact player, where there's just half a dozen, eight times a year, where he just makes a play in a big spot, or comes up with a run stop on second and eight that would have gone for a ton of yards, but brings up third and eight because he came up with a TFL. Like, that's kind of what I think he's going to do this year. I think you're going to see a really good season from Keon White.
I could see that. Coming off, should be noted, coming off getting shot in the ankle.
Yeah.
In February, I think, was it the night of the Super Bowl?
Yes. The morning after, technically. It was like 3 a.m.
Right.
He was hanging out at Hunter's Point at 3 a.m.
Oh. Who among us? You know? Yeah, so I don't know how serious that injury slash situation was, but
I saw he did an interview with somebody, and he was apparently at a basketball tournament, moving around fine. Sounds like he's going to be good to go for training camp. Didn't feel like talking about the injury much, which, fair.
Yeah, I think I don't know if I'd be dying to dive into that one.
Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit.
Yeah. Calling HIPAA, using HIPAA laws or whatever.
No, that's HIPAA.
Disgusting. That.
And you remember when Dak Prescott said that? When they asked Dak Prescott if he was going to get vaccinated, and he said, "That's HIPAA." Like, that's not that the application of that at all, brother. You can just say, "I don't want to answer." It's your right to not answer. It has nothing to do with your HIPAA rights.
God, I do not miss the pandemic or those conversations at all.
Bold take.
Don't miss it.
Hey, write that down. This podcast, anti-pandemic.
out on the pandy. All right. Subscribe, rate, and review. That's all we got. Kyle next week is going to have a full review of the Odyssey, so keep it locked for that. And by full review, I'm going to ask you about it in the intro for about 30 seconds.
Might be an emergency pod on it tomorrow night, tomorrow, depending on how it goes tonight.
Before we talk about training camp battles or whatever it is. But keep it locked. Subscribe, rate, and review. Check out lambchops.com. Promo code
Campbell. I'm gonna come up with some way to tie in a training camp preview or discussion with the Odyssey.
So maybe I can figure out a way to see it, and then we could do like players who are most like characters in the Odyssey.
Or players or takes that are most like the various perils that Odysseus has to.
Like, I'm already workshopping in my mind like a George Kittle is Odysseus like take here, and then maybe we could, you know,
tight
figure it out from there.
All right, either see it or read it by Monday.
Kyle Shanahan Agamemnon. Tune in. See you guys.
See you. Shout out our Roker.
That's our show for today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Candlestick Chronicles is produced and edited by Mike Robbie. If you're not already doing so, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@Candlestick Chronicles Podcast. Candlestick Chronicles is an Odyssey production.